Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Heart of Sports with Jason Springer and Jeff Cohen, powered by ELEC 825. We are thrilled to join you on WWDB 860 AM and 97.5 HD2, a part of the Beasley Media Group, ready to help you move into the weekend talking about all the news in the world of sports. I got a proud papa with me on the show this week, right, Jeff?
You do.
So tell me, you got to see your son graduate. You got a feel of the Dion.
In the best stadium in sports, by the way.
So you were
not with the best teams in sports, but if you know, for those people who appreciate stadiums, having a stadium that looks like that up against the Rocky Mountains, there's nothing better.
All right, so get the dad part out.
Just have a crappy team.
Get the dad part out of the way first. That's the most important part. Then I'll get to the sports part with Dion. How special was it for you?
It was our, what was it? Would you say he was our first writer, our first researcher?
He was our first statistician. He was our first, he was your first co-host. He was the one that you went to all the games
and with. And he was my first son.
Yes.
So
that is important.
It was a pretty cool experience. Commencement is a special time. And, you know, for anybody who has a kid and they worry about where they're going to go to college, He's the example that I always say of wherever you go is the right place.
Yeah, so he figured it out.
If nothing else comes out of people listening to our show, just realize, and I will tell you this in 10 years or a little over, is don't worry about where they go to college. Wherever they go is where they're meant to be. And that's where they find their people, because you raise them to be like that.
Well, and your son ended up in the middle of the Dion craziness, so it worked out for him. Either way, are they over?
Well, I mean, it depends. You know, as you sit in that stadium, I'm old enough. Thank you very much.
You said
I'll do my own smack talk of myself. You look in the stadium and there's a big sign or a big part of the stadium that says 1990 National Champions. So for those of
that was the Cordell Stewart team, right?
No, it is not. I think the Rashawn
team.
And I forget who the quarterback was at that point, but I think there was a big scandal involving that quarterback and the coach's daughter. So Google it yourself. I think everybody is close to done already with Dion.
He's run his course.
I think people are just tired of it. I think that the excitement, the hype. If you're going to be a hype person in sports, what is the one thing you have to do?
Win.
Yeah, you have to back it up.
You have to back up the talk. Otherwise, it becomes talk.
He backed it up for 3 weeks. And then it became a disaster again. And I think I've said on the show, and if I haven't, I know I've said to you, what you're seeing is a coach now in his second year who's not recruiting high school kids. He's obsessed with the transfer portal. And he seems to lose just as many people as he's getting from the transfer portal. And it is a bad thing when you start to hear kids who have left the school say things like, he broke me down as a person, that he's not building people up. And while that may be, and I'm using air quotes, old school, go find me a coach where that works today. And so my prediction is he's here for this year. He's lucky if he goes 500. He gets to sit there and promote his kids for one more year before they get drafted. And then he's got no future because he's not recruiting high school kids. And if you're not winning the recruiting of high school kids, no matter how great you think the transfer portal is, you're not going to win.
You know, it's really interesting you say that. We'll do the show a little backwards then, because this gets to a topic. John Calipari said something about how he's recruiting in basketball now with the transfer portal. So we'll get to baseball and everything shortly, but this kind of fits perfect because Calipari is only going to basically, with the turnover and the transfer portal, he said, you may think I'm crazy. I told my staff I only want 8 or 9 guys. They're leaving anyway. Why would I develop a kid for someone else? Why would I do that? So is that Dion's attitude? Like,
well, wait, hold on, just back up because I didn't see this quote. When he says he wants 8 or 9 guys, what is it? He wants an entire roster of 8 or 9 guys, and he doesn't want other people on the bench?
Yeah.
Okay, well, guess what happens then? If those guys are really good, they either go pro.
Or they leave.
Or they might leave because only 5 of them can be starters.
But is
only 2 or 3 of them can be stars. So if just follow me here. If that happens and you don't have a rest of a bench to develop, how is it that you're developing a program versus chasing your tail every year? Well, and by the way, you know, the guys in college and basketball, and I think we should talk the difference between basketball and football, is that in college basketball, the backups are who you practice against.
Well, and he spoke to that. Look, I agree with you. That's why I put this in here. I was shocked by this. He specifically spoke to changing his philosophy on assembling rosters in the transfer portal era. And he said he wants to use other roster spots for walk-ons and rely on those non-scholarship players and graduate assistants to help the team prepare for its opponents, that women's college basketball often use non-staffers to help them in practice. I don't see how that works, but it seems to be the same philosophy that Deion's going with. In the era of the transfer portal, he's going to change the way that he builds a team. And I don't think either of them.
Wait. But there's a huge difference between a basketball team that's 12 to 14 players versus a football team that's up to 100.
Sure, but I'm talking about the makeup of those players. He's not going out to get players that he doesn't think will rank in those top 50 on football or top 9 in basketball. He's going to fill them in with walk-ons because he's going to focus his efforts on the guys who are that talented to be there. I don't know if it works. Now, again, Calipari and basketball.
You know what the better definition for what he wants to do is?
Buy a team?
Coddle and placate.
Well,
that's all he wants. He wants to find the people and then sit there and say, you will always be the starter. You will always get the ball. You will always get that number of shots. And maybe it works for him, but I don't. At some point, that means, in my mind, you're coaching out of fear.
Isn't that what
you're coaching out of? A fear of constant loss.
That
is not. And by the way, I come from, look, what I saw in coach like John Beilein when he was at Michigan, what I saw in some football coaches, even, and you know, you don't see me giving Jim Harbaugh a lot of credit for a lot. Even Jim Harbaugh was teaching people to grow up, teaching people to learn, teaching people to get better at their craft. And that takes time. And it sounds like what Calipari is saying is, I don't have time.
But
I know that I have to do it this way. And at some point, you can't do that. Now, I'm now at Michigan, brought in Dusty May. He had to go out and get transfer portal because he had nobody.
But isn't that... Didn't Calipari do it a decade and a half ago, moving to the one and done? Like, he continued, whether it works or not, it kind of flared up. He did well with the one and done, and then it burned out. And now his next philosophy is the transfer portal, and he's not going to get anybody else. And I feel like Deion and coaches like that are kind of experimenting with this new way of building a roster. I personally don't think it will work, but I'm very curious to watch them do it. You're saying Deion's not getting high schoolers. He's getting guys from other schools who somebody's already given the skills to, bringing them in to fit his program. Whether they fit mentally and physically, that's another story. He's just recruiting them at a different age at that point.
Yeah, but you can't. Let's just stick with the offensive line.
Yeah.
Offensive lines are only good when they develop together.
I agree.
Okay. If you're every year going out and finding five guys to put together, they don't know every step. Like, you watch, I'll give you some credit, the Eagles offensive line, they work together for years to get where they are. They know everything about each other. They know exactly where people are going to move when they see certain defenses. If you look at Michigan's offensive line, they built over time. They became the best offensive line in college football because they worked together. Yes, there were some transfers that came into that. But Deion Sanders and nobody else is going to put together an offensive line of five guys every year and then have to replace them every year so there's no continuity.
Again, I agree with you. I am just observing what these coaches are doing. And even when they don't want to, look at Rutgers with Steve Peichel. They get these top recruits. Basically, nobody from last year's team will be back. Cliff Amuri turned down $2 million. I think he ended up at Alabama. Like, that, it just seems to be the era of where we are. But I'm curious how these coaches are trying to either take advantage of or badly manage this era of transfers that are moving around more than young guys that are coming in.
Well, I'm going to say something here about those coaches. They can't coach. That to me is what we're going to find out. And if I were counseling high school kids that were top high school kids, I would be telling them, do not go to Calipari. If you're already the top player in high school, everybody in the pros, all those scouts know who you are. The only reason you're going to go to college at that point is to develop even better.
Well, and NIL money.
And correct. Okay. let's pretend for a moment that NIL money doesn't come.
Okay.
If you know a coach can't coach, if you know a coach doesn't develop players, that only they do is warehouse them and showcase them for 1 year, they're not developing there. If you look at the Calipari players that have come into the NBA and done successful, they were already five-star prospects when they got to college. Mm-hmm. They went there for 1 year. They weren't particularly even great there. Was Tyrese Maxey the best player in college? Mm. Did he develop under for his short time that he was in Kentucky?
But you tell me, who did Deion develop last year? Who has Deion developed at his school?
Nobody. Nobody. And the only players that he might have arguably developed are his own son, which he had 18 years to do, and Travis Hunter, who was the best player in the country. And then he took them from Jackson State and brought them over to Colorado. But you're not going to see Cormani something or other was the top defensive back last year coming out of high school. He got him. Where is he? He's already transferred out. The fact is, you're not going to see players develop under Deion Sanders. And by the way, anybody who's worried that Deion Sanders is going to go to a better program or jump to the NFL, tell me what you'd like to bet, because he's not. If he's unsuccessful at Colorado, who else is going to put up with his nonsense? And by the way, do you know NFL players that are going to put up with a coach that acts like that?
It's just funny. I mean, as we start to get some longevity on this show, we're doing it 7-8 years now together. Just the amount of change in the makeup of rosters, the way that coaches coach, the way that they recruit, it's just happening right before our eyes as the sport itself changes. I mean, this is an attempt by these coaches of building your program a different way. Whether or not it's successful, you and I can think it won't be. Mm-hmm. We're more old school like that. I don't think it will be successful. And, Calipari with the one and dones, again, it flames out. You have success, and then it's not sustainable because the next class of one and dones don't work as well together, or that, whatever the factor is. I'm just really curious what college football looks like in 5 and 10 years if this is what the biggest name coaches are going to try and set the trend like.
Wait, who else in college football is doing this the way that Deion Sanders?
I didn't say anybody is, but Deion will get a lot of attention for being different. And you will see coaches.
He's going to get attention for failing.
Well, at times, but there will be things that other people pick up and incorporate into their things. It doesn't work for the person that goes to the extreme all the time. But the people who pick up the pieces and incorporate it into what they're doing often find different success. So how can you change the way you recruit? And you're seeing it. I mean, Dusty May's going there at Michigan. He's using transfers, but he's also recruiting young guys. He's trying to build a mixed roster.
This was a one-year thing for him, I believe. I believe that he'll always look for people in the transfer portal, but he had nobody. They had no program.
And with Rutgers, I have the opposite. I have the superstars there now that they're filling around that probably won't be there long. So right. I've never seen this as a fan to root for my team. I've always had the long-term build your team, get your role guys. Now, Peichel is filling in role guys around the stars that he's recruited. It's just really interesting to watch the different ways that these coaches are approaching it. And yes, the sports are different and the roster building is different, but I think the coaches stepping in this direction is something to watch.
It's going to be interesting, but I hate to be a fatalist, especially
you would never ever be a fatalist.
As I'm doing this show remotely from from Denver.
Yeah, don't you have like beautiful thin air in your head and like you can see the mountains, you should be happy. You would never be a fatalist on this show.
For those that listen to this show at a later date, we're doing this show on May 10th.
10th, yes.
They had hand warmers at the stadium.
Oh, I feel so bad for you. Oh, did you have to wear a jacket, Jeff?
Oh, there was a prediction of snow.
Well, you know, when your kid went to Colorado, you should have known that there might be snow at graduation.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Isn't that part of what you paid for with the tuition? The weather.
No. It's worth every penny. But part of your tuition payment goes to Ralphie.
Oh, the buffalo.
the buffalo.
How does it feel to own a buffalo?
They don't give you ownership of the buffalo. You just pay for the food.
So it's not like the Packers. You don't get like share of the team. You don't get
Nobody gave me a stock certificate for several. I won't even say the amount of money that it costs to go to college these days. But I did get to see Ralphie run, and I can't imagine a better thing to see in a sports game other than what we've seen in Army Navy games than a buffalo run across a field.
You should have tried the run with Ralphie. That would have been entertaining. Video didn't happen.
Yeah, Jeff. No. Speed was not my game.
Neither is skill. I hate to tell you, I've seen you play.
Okay.
Says the guy who can't even dribble between his legs.
You just got better at Smack Talk.
See, I learned from last week's
show.
Well
done.
Right? I did okay there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't even let it speak for itself. All right. Are you ready to talk some baseball?
The best record in baseball?
They're a fun team, man. They had won 7 in a row and 11 of their last 12 before losing to the Blue Jays on Wednesday afternoon. It's the first time in 24 days they lost at home. I mean, the 2023 Phillies didn't win their 26th game until June 3rd. The Phillies are 26-2 now. Last year, they didn't get to 15 games over 500 until August 28th. I mean, it's definitely...
And why is it? And what would you be giving as the number one reason that this team is where they are this year versus where they were the last 2 years at this point?
The pitching.
Yeah.
I mean, the pitching's been spectacular. They lead the National League in team ARA. They lead the league in starters ERA. They lead the league in strikeouts. They have more wins than any team in baseball from their starters at 21. Ranger Suarez is 6-0 with a 1.73 ERA. You put Spencer Turnbull in the bullpen with a 1.57 ERA. Zach Wheeler's got a 1.64 ERA. Aaron Nola has the high ERA on the staff of a regular starter at 3.67.
And he's not pitching his best yet.
No.
I mean, he's having a problem getting the ball down in the zone. If you looked at the last game he pitched, the positions of the ball where they were hit were all right down the middle.
Is that concerning to you? Do you think he'll figure that out?
No, I think he will figure it out. It's not like he's pitching poorly. He's just leaving some pitches up.
So
that happens to any pitcher. And again, one of the things that we have learned about for some reason, this organization is that until it hits June, if it's even a little nippy for some reason, this team doesn't hit home runs and the pitching isn't great. And the pitching's been great. The home runs are kind of there. Harper is heating up now, so everybody should be really happy about that. The concern is whether they're going to be able to weather the storm of Trey Turner being out for close to 2 months and whether or not this pitching staff holds up. The reason, like, people keep going, why in the world is Spencer Turnbull taken out and put in the bullpen for Taiwan Walker? Well, there's two reasons. One is Turnbull hasn't pitched this many innings in a long time. So you want to preserve him, even if you're going to put him back in the starting rotation. But second, there's nobody after this. Anybody who has hopes that Mick Abel's going to be coming up this year, not the way he's pitching in AAA right now, he's not coming up. Griff McGarry, who was the other great hope, he's been moved to the bullpen. He's not pitching out great right now. There's nobody else. So the cupboard is bare. And you have to give Taiwan Walker a chance right now, because otherwise you're going to be getting to trade deadline time and you're going to have to find another starter. Now, there is one out there, Rich Hill.
Okay.
So So I don't know if anybody's paying attention to this. Rich Hill's been offered, I believe, three jobs now. Rich Hill's been in the majors for what, 20 some odd years? No spring chicken. He's been around, I think he's 43,
He's
44 years
pitched in the
old.
World Series. He's
He has decided that he is, one, going to coach his kids' little league team for the first half of the season, and he's going to preserve himself and come back for the second half of the year. And he's going to wait and see who's the contender that needs him. So he's turned down a bunch of offers. I haven't heard who the offers were, but I've heard that there were, I think there were three offers by major league teams so far. If the Phillies were smart and the Phillies keep this up, they might be the one that gets Rich Hill. And I think that would be huge.
You look at what the starters have done so far. They've got 10 starts of 7-plus innings, 22 starts of 6-plus innings. That's 32 starts where the starter has gone 6-plus. That helps your bullpen. You know, the other night they wanted to piggyback Sanchez and Turnbull, where Sanchez would go five and then Turnbull would do the end of the game. Sanchez is pitching so well, he went seven. Turnbull got in for eight and nine.
Right.
I mean, it's.
But you don't want to overtax them. I mean, this is great that they have this many quality long starts, but you want to make sure, again, we're only hitting the middle of May now.
I love.
You don't want to over-inning them.
Okay, so it's so funny. I love the fatalism. How many people came up to you and they're like, "I don't want them to peak too soon," type thing, because they got off to a good start.
I don't worry about the peak too soon. I just worry about injuries.
I know, but how many people said that to you? Because I had like multiple people say
Oh, I know. Yeah.
like we're just
Well,
trained
but
to be like.
that's sports. That's like, how many people are the eternal optimists? The only time that in baseball, real baseball fans are eternal optimists is spring training. Once the season starts, no matter how good you are, the sky is going to fall.
Well, I mean, you talk about the start. That's where the Phillies have done it. They're outscoring their opponents 45-10 in the first two innings of their last 20 games. So, I mean, they're jumping on people early. You were
Go
one
ahead,
of.
go ahead. Here's your chance to say, see, Jeff, Kyle Schwarber at the top of the lineup.
I'm
Look
not
how it's
arguing.
working.
I'm done with that argument. That argument is done. Kyle Schwarber will be the leadoff hitter, but for right now, it is working. I'm more entertained by. We have to play on this show sometime. Alec Bohm's first interview after being drafted, which was with you.
Will that be my drop the mic, walk off, and say that I've completely failed at this craft?
that did not go rather well, actually.
No, it did not.
But he had an 18-game hitting streak end this week. It's the longest in the majors so far this season, the longest by any Phillies player since 2017. He's batting .492 with 21 RBIs in his last 15 games. Are you surprised by what he's turned into? I mean, we've watched him come through the minors. We've heard the debates of, can he play third? What position will he play? Is he a doubles hitter? What is he? His defense is clearly better than anybody ever thought, talking about him in the system for third base. They thought he was too tall to do that. And his hitting, I mean, he's been solid.
And he's starting to confidently pull the ball. Like, his big problem when he came up to the majors was he wanted to hit to obsessively wanted to hit to all fields. By doing that, he had no power. He was so interested in contact and spraying ball that he had no power. It seems that this offseason they have convinced him to be more confident that he makes enough contact, because that was another problem. I remember us talking about when he was drafted that because he's tall, it's hard to command the strike zone. And he seems to have done that. He's not a strikeout machine. And I think now that he's confident in his ability to make contact, he's able to confidently pull the ball more. And you're starting to see more power. But he has been, the last couple of years, impressively, the RBI guy. He does seem to get clutch hits quietly.
He is very clutch now for them, and he seems comfortable in his role. And we have talked to so many players and coaches about guys knowing their role. And when they know their role and what they're supposed to do when they come to the ballpark every day, it just becomes automatic. It becomes easier for them. And it just looks like it's easier for him right now than it was when he was a younger ball player.
Would you put any stock in the three error game, that might have been a change not only in the way people see him in this city, but also the way that he is in the city?
Well, and I think it changed the way when you have that reaction, you have that game, it takes the pressure off. It's in some way. It's like, how much worse can it get? You kind of bottomed out there. So it's like you can only go up. Like, I already had the three error game in the majors in front of everybody, and said stuff on national TV. Like, there's no place else to go but up at that point or out of the league. So it's like, maybe the pressure came off him a little bit and he just kind of settled in and does his thing now. I don't know.
And you know, this is one of those moments that, you know how I feel about Kyle Schwarber at the top of the lineup. He is a leader and he has helped in his leadership develop an amazing locker room.
Well, and apparently Trey Turner is very helpful with them all with their at-bats as mm-hmm. well. He's been, I mean, those are the stories you like to see. These guys, we talked about it with, I forget who do we have a few weeks ago where we were talking about, Jack McGlynn, the makeup of the Union locker room
mm-hmm.
and how you guys, how they have guys from all over the place. And you have the same thing in the Phillies locker room. They are a locker room in the sense of the word. When you think about it, they laugh together. They go out together. They have fun together and they have fun playing ball together.
And it does take the pressure off. I mean, when you see Zach Wheeler, do you not think Roy Halladay? Not just, I'm not just talking about the way
he's a bulldog,
but his personality.
Yes. He's so focused.
Like Mr. No, he looks like no fun.
Yes,
right?
He's so focused.
But if you read, did you read the story this week about what he does in the locker room about the smoke machine?
Yeah, he's like a prankster and he has
fun.
Yeah.
And so that, when you hear those stories and you hear how this team has developed, you know, where you might sit there and say, there's going to be a regression. You went to the World Series. The next year, you only made it to the championship game. That this is the regression time. This team, does anybody believe that?
No.
I don't think so. I think most people look at this team and say, they do have a purpose. They seem to love being around each other, and they make each other work.
Well, and
make each other work with reminding themselves that they're still playing a game.
And when you look at the league, there's only five teams in the National League that are above 500 in the whole National League, not the National League East. National League East has a 466 winning percentage. The Phillies have only played.
Yeah, but those five teams are really good right now.
They are, but it's a different scenario if you're not chasing from behind all season. Getting off to this start lets them play different than they have in past years. I mean, they have 10 games. 19 of their next 22 games are against, quote, bad teams. They go to Miami for a three-game stretch. Nobody will be there for the 10-27 Marlins, who traded Luis Arias for bag of balls and then paid his salary, basically, to San Diego. Then they play the Mets and the Nationals. They don't play a team with a winning record until they play the Rangers here on May 21st. So they have the chance to keep racking up some wins and putting some space between them while the Braves struggle and the Mets sputter. And I mean, they really have a chance to put some distance there.
The Phillies have been one of the biggest surprises in baseball, just in the way that they've started the year, but I would not put them in the top two as surprises in the league right now.
Who is that?
Guess. Who would you say?
The
top two surprises?
A's.
Because the A's are definitely... If you can go back and do research and figure out what the over-under was before game one of the season on the wins for the A's, right now, if you
took
the under,
passed it.
You're going to go, you got to be real nervous.
Yeah,
right
they
now.
Probably reached the over already.
And did anybody expect the Astros to be this bad?
No.
And I'd say that with joy in my voice.
No, nobody expected them to be this bad at all. Can I tell you something I'm happy is not occurring here?
Uh-oh.
Have you seen how many saves Craig Kimbrell has blown for the Orioles
yes,
so far?
Yes, you did tell me that, again, with joy in your voice.
I'm so glad he's not here anymore. Excuse me as I cough into the mic.
Is he now?
Or the Orioles.
Orioles would have four more wins.
Yes, they're putting him in high leverage. Well, one of them, I think they still wanted in extras after he blew the save. The other night. But yeah, I mean, they're putting him in high leverage situations and he is not delivering right now. We've never seen before, Jeff.
Guess what the Orioles will be going for at the deadline?
Just wait till they have the pitch clock violations to go with the blown
Has
saves.
Has he had any?
I haven't seen that. I've just seen the final like blown save. Am I a troll, by the way, that I hate watch all these people who leave that I didn't like how they played and were coached when they were here?
No, that's a Philadelphia thing to do.
Okay, just making sure. Yeah. Just getting an analysis of my personality.
I would like to complain just a tiny bit.
Never.
About a Major League Baseball rule.
Okay.
I was watching a game, I believe it was a Mets game the other day, where they have the mound visits,
mm-hmm.
the maximum mound visits. A team hit the maximum mound visits, and they... Did you know that there's a maximum number of mound visits, but you get one more in the ninth inning?
No. Is that like
what's the point?
Is that like the extra?
Tell me
challenge?
What the point is. They put it on the scoreboard. They waste scoreboard space on this ridiculous statistic about mound visits left. And it turns out that you get an extra one. So why not just put on the stupid mound visit
plus
thing? Plus one.
Things
Did anybody know this?
No.
Like,
I had no idea.
Why do we have this?
And now I'm going to the game Wednesday night, the Mets game with my son, and I'm going to stare at the scoreboard and get tracked the mound visits the whole time. Because you told me. I wouldn't have known that.
I didn't think anybody ever got close to blowing the mound visits, but apparently even when you blow the mound visits, you don't.
Since you're paying attention to what happens during games, were you watching Sunday night when they had Brandon Marsh mic'd up in the outfield?
I was not.
He was fun and he was entertaining. Mm-hmm. But I go on Twitter and all these people are both sidesing it, like, oh, he's fun and great, or they're gonna distract him from the play, or that. Do you care when they interview a guy in the outfield? Like, no. Do you have an opinion?
What does that mean, distract him? You're just talking.
Yes.
Okay. You're standing out there doing nothing until the ball gets hit.
Yes.
You don't think you think that their eyes get any worse when they're talking?
The split like
if they said, hey Brendan, can you look over into the dugout of the other team and tell us why he's chewing that gum, that would be distracting.
Yes, I agree with
you. So we're now finding ways to make baseball players actually likable and entertaining and have personalities, and we're going to complain about that?
Do we want to go back?
I like Mike Trout. Seems like a great guy. He's the dullest man in sports. Do we want a whole league of that?
I had the exact same reaction to you. Why won't people just let it be fun? Like, if he drops a ball, you've got an argument. Other than that, shut your mouth. What's the difference? Another thing I wanted to know about.
Why are you wasting time reading this?
Well, because I waste time reading lots of things. I have wasted time on this show with much worse things than what I just brought up.
You've wasted 7 years with me.
Do you have a problem with baseball games starting at 11:35 in the morning?
Not necessarily. Why?
Looks like Roku's going to get the new national broadcast deal, and the Phillies game against the Diamondbacks on the 23rd will move from a 1:40 start to 11:35 start.
What's the date of this?
The June 23rd game, but whenever they strike the deal is when it'll start. Basically, Roku is picking up the Peacock package, where there'll be morning baseball that starts like 11:35, 12 o'clock, basically.
How are you not excited about it?
I love it, but you're the grouchy one. I think it's awesome.
Not about that. Look, I don't care about that.
I'm up at 6 o'clock with my kids, so anything that can start earlier is good for me. But this you
constantly talk about.
I think it's
games
awesome.
Being too late, that the future generation. You school's over.
I love it.
And the stadium should be packed with kids.
Kids.
And kids could be who can't get there can also sit at home and watch a baseball game.
I love it.
Perfect to me.
Do you like it? Are you okay with it? Because I bitch to you regularly about start times because it's later. But I didn't know that I finally got an earlier start time. Does somebody who's a traditionalist care about that?
I'm likely not going to that game,
okay.
But I'm perfectly okay with it. I don't need to watch all 162 games.
Okay.
So I'm good with it.
All right.
And it makes you happy.
It does.
It makes Jason less grumpy.
Nothing makes me less grumpy, but it does make me happy that it's going on. I sent you a text. You didn't respond to me. Shohei has a reality twist now to his gambling.
Wow. I don't care. if it's not gambling related, I don't care.
Did you see they're going to make it into a TV show, though? They're developing a series based on the rise of Shohei and his friend.
No, they want to do a 30 for 30 in 10 years. I'm good with that. I don't need to see this.
You're all good.
Are you going to watch that? Yes.
Of course I will. Yeah. Of course I will. And we'll probably talk to Keith O'Brien, who wrote the Pete Rose book, about the gambling side of it at some point, because... Mm-hmm. I think that is going to be an ongoing story. And look, you have the college guys that were suspended from Iowa this year suing the state of Iowa for how it happened. So like, it's not as clear cut.
Wait, what's their beef?
They believe that they were illegally basically charged with things and were treated poorly because of it. Like, I don't think it's as clear cut. You see the NCAA talking about, do we change any of our rules on gambling around it with players being able to do fantasy and stuff. I just think that as much as you hate it, the idea of gambling in sports is going to be a bigger and bigger conversation as we go forward.
I hate it.
I know you do, but we have to recognize reality, right?
I don't need to say anything else other than I hate it. But you know, you mentioned the NCAA again. The NCAA, it's unfair to measure the NCAA because the NCAA has no scruples. They don't stick. That's the wrong word. They have no organizational structure that they're able to control and predict the future or deal with the future and even the past. I got to tell you, Reggie Bush thing. I've heard people say to me, "Oh, you know, it's great that Reggie Bush got his Heisman back." He cheated. He broke the rules. And now that everybody's decided that that rule is stupid, we're going to hand people stuff that what they did was wrong. When they did it, they knew it was wrong. Reggie Bush didn't not know what he was doing, correct?
I knew that you would have a take on that.
Like, and here we go. I'll be Michigan-centric now. Does this mean the Fab Five now gets their whatever punishments they had as a result of Chris Webber taking, what, $300,000 or whatever it was? Are we now going to say that because there's NIL money now, there should have been then, and therefore the punishment should go away?
That's a, I mean, that's basically the extrapolation of the argument, right?
Yes, but you know what that creates, and this is the lawyer speaking in me, is that we have rules and we have punishments to not only punish you for the violation of the rules, but deter people from doing it again, right? So if you now have set up a system where the rules are the rules until the rules change, and therefore the people that broke the rules are no longer rule breakers, then anybody can sit there and say, I can do whatever I want as long as I can get away with it for the 4 years or wherever long I'm going to be there. Because it's someday people are going to realize I'm right and they were wrong.
But that's bad.
Society breaks down, my man, if that happens. and society broke down in the NCAA, and that's why we're in the quagmire we are. And wasn't it nice that I used quagmire instead of the word I actually want to use?
Yeah, I'm impressed with the ways that you're hiding your contempt during this conversation with the words that you are using. Yes. Anything else you want to do?
The
with
other
best?
Word was cluster bleep.
Anything else you want to do with baseball or college before we find another sport to talk about?
I'd love to play baseball, but talking baseball, I think we've done.
Are you going to any games coming up? You have your Friday night package, right? You'll miss it tonight.
I'm wearing my Coors Field hat because I got here a little early this week and was sitting in my hotel, which was it, by the way, for nobody who's ever been to Denver, the Union Station area, which is beautiful, is a couple blocks from the stadium. So after I was done with work, I walked a couple blocks. It's a beautiful stadium that hardly anybody goes to now because the Rockies have sucked for longer than the Marlins. And caught a couple innings of a Rockies Giants game.
Were they wearing a City Connect uniform that you could hate on too, or were
no.
they?
You know, it's funny.
They should wear the sleeveless with the purple underneath that they used to wear as their City Connect.
Yeah, and no, I don't know what they wear anymore. Actually,
Has the City Connect grown on you at all?
No, and the funny thing is, I was in the airport, and we know that our former researcher stats guy is a huge Philly sports fan. And loves Philly merchandise. And I saw the City Connect hats and I said, you know what? How nice would it be to bring him one? He hates them.
Really?
So gut wise, I said, I'm not going to buy it. I went against myself and said, I'm not going to buy it. And I said,
one on when he got out there.
No. I said, hey, by the way, I was going to get you a City Connect hat. He goes, thank God you didn't.
Oh, really? Okay. So here's the funny thing.
Hates them.
If I don't look at it as a Phillies hat,
mm-hmm.
I like the City Connect hat.
Which one? The one that says
love
or the one with the bell?
The bell. I like both of them. I think both of them are okay. It's the jersey that just I can't get around. No. I'm not there. It's just not happening for me.
As the get off my lawn guy.
I love how we have our roles on the show.
I'm okay with a little bit of change, but that was too much change.
The funny thing about our roles on the show is we didn't create them. We just kind of are them. So like, it's not like we said, hey, we need the old get off my lawn guy on the show.
Right.
You just kind of fell into that because it's who you are.
I kind of fit into it.
And like, I am the neurotic co-host who loses my mind over everything and watches everything. So like, it's not like we're playing roles and acting this out to do a show. No. It just happens naturally.
Yeah. So for people who hate who we are on the radio,
that's that you would not like us in real life either, then I guess. I mean, what can I tell you?
We can't change.
No, it's not going to
happen. We have not developed acting chops. This is who we are.
I could barely do radio. Okay. And you know, I can't dribble through my legs. So this is all I got. Did you pay attention to Daryl Morey speaking this week, or do you not care at all?
Daryl Morey speaking, or anyone from the Sixers speaking, again, about to show my age, is like listening to the teacher in Charlie Brown.
Wah, 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 wah. Exactly. Are you happy that I know that, by the way? That I like you say that, and I immediately, it's not too old for me to know
that. That does more my heart to know that that Charlie Brown's still relevant, at least to people in their 40s.
My kids wouldn't know what it is. But
really, anything they say, and we've said this every year for years, the whole star hunting thing and everything else, everything they say means nothing.
He's still star hunting.
If Daryl Morey didn't come out and give an end of the season talk, people would complain that he wasn't transparent for 5 seconds and then all realize we don't really care what he has to say. At this point, it's put up or shut up. And the Sixers have needed to just shut up for a very long time. And all we complained about and all I told you all season was, this was a team that was built for a second-round exit, just like every other one.
Oh, they'd have gotten
They decided to prove me wrong by going out in the first round.
If you're watching any of the games in the second round, even with the team's injuries, they'd have gotten boat raced in the second round. I mean, it would have been ugly. And so here's what I don't understand, and I'm trying to think back. You know players and history better than me.
Now you're just using the word boat race just to be annoying.
In the super team era, where they go star hunting and put these rosters together, other than the Miami Heat, who's won with the three superstar model and no bench?
Well, would you count the Lakers of the COVID year?
So I guess because Russ was there, right? With Anthony.
I believe he was LeBron. The third, right?
I don't count the COVID year for anything.
Okay.
But like, it seems like a lot
of times. That's a participation trophy for you?
It seems like a lot of times they go to put these three stars together and then there's no team around.
Well, no, but people don't want to give Adam Silver credit, but give him credit for something. The leagues always try to keep salaries down and keep control so that even the small market teams get to keep their stars, right? And the players' unions of every league always try to get salaries to come up and so that they can have as much movement as possible. This apron system that is now going into effect in the NBA, Adam Silver was a genius. Whoever came up with it with him is a genius. Because
explain for our listeners who don't understand the apron system. Explain what will happen.
I don't know why they chose to call them aprons. I don't know if there's a cooking show involved. But the fact is that you now have like tiers of salary cap, right? You have penalties for if you go over certain amounts on the salary. You're allowed to go over the salary cap, so they should stop calling it that. But once you go over
a certain amount, it's a salary recommendation.
Yes, exactly. And so when you go over it, you get penalized. If you go over a certain amount more, you get penalized more. And it becomes cost prohibitive, even for teams like the Golden State Warriors who have blown it, you know, past those numbers, God knows how many times. But the Suns will now be the example of what you cannot do.
Yes.
So the Suns decided this apron system was coming. We need to figure out if we can win now. Let's go all in and let's go get KD. Let's go get Bradley Beal. And now they have their Booker, Beal, and Durant three. The problem is, in order to get those players that are all max players, they had to trade every other piece that was worth something. Every other player that had a role was now gone. So you had three players and no depth. And look what happened to the Suns. They went out in the first round. And by the way, then they fired their coach.
Definitely his fault.
I don't think Frank Vogel decided, hey, let's go get three players and go find a bunch of people off the street to fill them in around.
Well, that's like Darvin Ham getting fired by the Lakers. Like, what was he going to do? And I guess I wasn't fair. I guess I should give Golden State with Durant, Clay, and Steph as a super team some credit. But it just seems like more often than not, you have the Phoenix Suns.
No. See, I actually would not give them credit.
You don't give them credit. It seems like you end up with the Nets or the Suns.
They already had a big three.
Yes.
You're not counting Draymond Green in that.
No.
Because he's just a clown now. But
because he wasn't... Draymond became a quote superstar because he was paid that way, but Draymond was a role player on
no
that
but
team.
He was a superstar role player,
yes, but he knew his role there. I just didn't look at him as a superstar like I do Durant and the other guys.
Yeah, but history will show that the big three for Golden State includes him.
Doesn't it?
So Durant was a really great role model piece that they added to an already championship team.
Does it end more though, like the Nets with the Harden, Durant, Kyrie, and the Suns than it does the Heat? Do you see where the teams try to go for it, it doesn't work, and then they've got nothing but ruins left? Even though Phoenix will tell you they're in good shape right now, their owner.
So the Nuggets who are about to themselves get, I'll use the phrase because it makes you so happy.
Oh, that's right. Both, you're both, out there. Are people losing their mind that they're down 2-0?
Yes, they're in panic mode. And they have every right to be because they got boat raced, as you call it, by the Timberwolves. But that team was not a big three. It has Jokic. It has Jamal Murray. And it has some really good role players like Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter Jr. And you can go on. And that's the way to build a team.
Well, that
but hold on. Let me finish here because all of a sudden the light bulb just went off. And that doesn't happen with me very often, especially on a Friday. The Sixers have Maxi. They now have Maxi and Embiid.
Yes.
And what Morey did this year with those role players, if you got somebody to fit other than you could put me or you instead of Tobias Harris.
Yes.
You actually might develop something.
Yes. Isn't that a better pick?
But that's not what they're going
to
do. This
no, week. They're going to trade all the picks in the capital for an aging veteran to say we have three superstars and then piece it together with a bunch of role guys for the bench. And Daryl Morey will be all excited that he finds a Kelly Oubre on a minimum contract because that's all he can spend because the guys that he bought aren't playing because they're injured because they're older.
And that's why the Sixers won't work, because their mentality is still the Phoenix Suns mentality. It's still the Brooklyn Nets mentality. It's still the Lakers mentality. It is amazing to me how nobody seems to see it coming. Well, not nobody.
We do.
Who are the teams left in the playoffs? Okay. So you have the Celtics, but the Celtics built their team basically from their drafts.
Yeah.
Right. You have the Cavaliers.
Yeah, the core of their team is Tatum and Jaylen Brown. So you can talk about who they bring in otherwise to make it, but they drafted that core.
Yeah, and they have Derek, and they brought in Drew Holiday, which was a genius move in my part.
And Porzingis, who's out now. But
you have the Cleveland Cavaliers, who built from the draft, except they went out and got Donovan Mitchell. You have who else? You have Indiana.
You have the Knicks that really in Indiana.
You have the Knicks that built from the draft, but then also traded to get Jalen Brunson. But they traded for Jalen Brunson or got signed Jalen Brunson when he was not this Jalen Brunson.
Yes.
Who even Jay Wright came out this week and said, I never thought he was going to
be
this good.
Yes.
Right. And then you look in the West and you have
Dallas.
The Nuggets, who built in the draft. You have the Timberwolves that built in the draft.
You have Oklahoma, who basically controls the draft.
Huh?
You have Oklahoma City, who basically controls the draft for the next 10 years.
These are not the teams that are left did not go out and do the star hunting big three.
No, not
they
at
just
all.
Didn't do it.
No,
you have two great players, two usually max players, and then you surround them with really good players that know their roles and can exceed and can carry a team for a game or two when the stars can't.
Well, and so we talked at the start of the show of college coaches that are going in a different direction. You've seen these franchises that for years have done the star hunting. It seems like we have a general manager that's still in that era of basketball, while you have these other general managers that are in a different era building teams as opposed to signing stars.
And they're building coaches. That's the other thing, is all these teams that go out and chase coaches and go in and bring in a new name when it doesn't work after a year or two. How long was Malone with the Nuggets beforehand? What about Chris Finch, the job that he's doing in Minnesota? The number of coaches that are left in this playoff who are developing with their program, with their team, is impressive. And when you look at like the Lakers, how many coaches have the Lakers gone through? And by the way, I didn't realize LeBron's had like six coaches in it that he's gotten basically fired in his career.
Oh, yeah.
And did you hear that story? I heard the story about Pat Riley walking into a locker room at one of the Heat games and saying, by the way, Eric Spoelstra's not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the kind of I grew up hating Pat Riley, despising him because as a Sixers fan, he was the Lakers coach of the Showtime teams, and then he was the Knicks coach. But has there been a better person at his jobs multiple
than Riley?
Riley over the last three and plus decades?
Spoelstra's done a pretty good job since they've given him the chance too.
Exactly. And he had, because he had the support, but as much as it is the players, coaching does matter. And sticking with a coach to let them develop the players is so important in this NBA.
I did want to ask you, we've got about 5 minutes left here on the show. I got to talk soccer for a second. Those other sports are there, but the Union made a splash in the sports world. And a few weeks ago, I asked you about it, and you're like, we're not going to get to see it. Has your attitude changed around the Union signing Kevin Sullivan? No, you're shaking your head. No, we do a radio show. You have to talk.
Discussion with people yesterday, huh?
We do a radio show. You have to talk. When you shake your head no on the radio, people only hear the.
If I shake it hard enough, I might be able to hear. No, I don't.
All right, Grumpy.
I understand the reality, but they signed a kid who is 14 years old, who is supposed to be a wunderkind at his sport.
Yes.
He's still 14.
Yes.
Even if he's not going to play on the MLS team at 15.
That's not
or
true.
16. Okay, fine.
They actually said in the Inquirer story yesterday, it could be later this year during the Leagues Cup tournament that he would play for the big squad.
Okay.
So I think you're looking at it as we signed a guy that we're never going to get to see play. And I don't think that that's the way the Union are looking at it. They don't seem to be looking at him as a 14-year-old right now.
Okay, then let's assume you're right. That's worse.
Why?
That is worse.
If he's that talented, why wouldn't you play him? That does happen.
How would you have liked it if Chase Utley came up, was signed, played in the minor leagues for a half a season, came up, became Chase Utley over the next 2+ years with the knowledge that at his prime, he's going to play for somebody else. That the plan you will never reap the fruits. Buying his jersey?
I am going to hate when he leaves, but I'm going to love getting to see him play for the next 3.5 years. You're just skipping ahead to him going out the door.
Yes.
Because we're not going to get to see his prime career, and that's going to suck. But we didn't.
I'm going to tell you, if he's really good, he goes earlier.
We didn't get to see that with Brendan Aaronson, his prime career. Mm-hmm. He left.
Right.
We didn't get to see that with Mark McKenzie. That's what soccer does. They sell off their talent. But that doesn't mean you can't enjoy the talent while it's here. This guy's potentially.
I can't enjoy
it. And he's eligible for the U.S. team and the German team. Apparently, he's going to play for U.S. soccer. So, you know, we've got basically the Union are stocking the U.S. team between Jack McGlynn and Nate Harriel and Mark McKenzie and Brendan Aaronson. And I mean, this is pretty cool that we build this way. I think this is like the 22nd player.
Wait
from
a
the
second.
Academy.
This show just went full circle.
What?
And my head just exploded.
What?
We talked about college basketball.
Yes.
And how some teams are farm teams for other teams.
Yes.
And now we're talking about the Union. And by the way, you hated that. And now we're talking about the Union being a farm team for European soccer.
I didn't say I like the end result. I said I like the fact that I get to watch the talent come up here. I don't like that they leave. And I don't like that Carranza is going to go this summer. That
are you
I
going are you going to buy if you continue to be the Union fan you are, and your kid loves the Union, you're going to buy him a Sullivan jersey knowing that he's going to be gone when your kid's eight?
Well, you tell me, how many crazy jerseys did you buy for your son of players that were traded or things that he liked?
No, you know he's going. There's a huge difference.
I'm not making the rules of it.
Wearing somebody's jersey and thinking they're going to be here long term because they're great, and somebody you know is leaving because they're going to be
here. I actually think that's how you end up with people that watch European soccer. They like the player and follow it. There are people who watch Brendan Aaronson that didn't watch Premier League before, didn't watch European soccer.
Oh, I don't believe that.
I don't like that.
You really think that people are following?
I think there are people
that didn't watch European soccer
before? There are people that follow players. I do. Just because of what you said, because they don't get to see them be the player that they see them grow up as here. I do. I don't like your logic.
I still follow Logan Ohapi because I watched him in the
You do.
League.
That's right. You send but me the, updates. I send you things on Brandon Marsh, and your response is Logan Ohapi.
Right. But my concern is, or... then we all have to just admit the MLS is a minor league soccer league. And I don't want to admit that.
I don't admit that, but there are...
But it is.
Well,
system that... This is an example of... It is exactly that.
It is an example that at times it is, but there's plenty of players that they have here that stay here that come here too. Soccer just has people go all over the place. You're going to have to find a last word because we got to go, dude. Nothing? Okay. No last word? Silence.
I got nothing on this.
Okay, graduated. You're happy. You got nothing. Nothing for me.
I got nothing for
Congratulations,
you.
Dad. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Make sure to join us next Friday night to help you start your weekend in style. Have a great one, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Operating engineers are the men and women that move mountains. And the Engineers Labor Employer Cooperative, ELEC, puts them to work. They create opportunities for the men, women, and union signatory contractors of Local 825, repaving our roads, keeping our homes bright and warm, and even building our favorite team stadium. We understand infrastructure. That's why ELEC and Local 825 are ready to get to work.